Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's guest is Marshall Masters, a former CNN science features news producer, freelance writer, television analyst, and the publisher of YOWUSA.com. He spent 3 years researching Nibiru, flyby-related topics including catastrophic earth changes, crop circles, impact events, and future technologies. He's written several books, including Godchild Covenant, Return of Nibiru, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift, and also Planet X, Forecast in 2012 and Beyond Survival Guide. Mr. Masters, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
Just fine. It's a pleasure, and I have really got to update that bio because I haven't been studying it for 3 years. I've been studying it for 12.
So 12 years of research, obviously, you're definitely an icon. I mean, I go to your YouTube channel. You've got a ton of views. People definitely go to your website to get information. The first time I came across Nibiru or the infamous Planet X was when I read some work of Zachariah Sitchin talking about the 3,600-year cycle. You know, obviously, there's been several times that it was supposed to come around and change the world, destroy the world, whatever, and it hasn't happened yet. But it sounds to me like you've got some current video footage of possibly Nibiru right now.
Yeah, no, we're tracking the whole system. I mean, first off, I think you're talking about the old 2003 Nancy Leader Zeta Talk Mark Hazelwood thing. And back then, so that people haven't heard about that. It's happened back in 2003. A guy by the name of Mark Hazelwood lifted a lot of content off of Nancy Leader's Zeta Talk website, and he published a book called Blindsided. And it really caused quite a panic. It was a very bad time for us. We didn't see anything in the science that indicated that there would be an imminent flyby, and we had a lot of folks writing us letters, and their letters were, you know, you could just see them struggling to be rational and calm, and the fear was just oozing out between the words. It was just an awful thing we saw. And in terms of recently, you know, there's been a lot of people saying, well, you know, it was supposed to be in 2012 and that my December 21, 2012 predictions were wrong. I never made any Planet X predictions for December 21, 2012. You know, I talked about a crop circle that referenced it. But in fact, we've been observing it from the Turrialba webcam on three different camera systems since 2010. The imagery's been there. And so this object has been tracking, and no, it's not Venus. And so there's another group, 00 Skyview. They have been chased off of YouTube, and they've had some of the same similar problems that you guys have had and others are having, is that there's a lot of heavy suppression right now in alternative media, particularly in this topic.
Have you had some issues with that on your website or your YouTube channel?
I haven't had problems with my YouTube channel, but I do things a little differently. When I set up Yowza, actually, I had the help of a former intelligence officer, very highly placed in the government, who understood all of this, knew it was coming. And this was back in 1999 when I was first writing with the Millennium Group. And he really kind of gave me the ropes of how to set it up. What a lot of people don't understand is, you know, I get folks that keep saying, well, you're just peddling, you know, you're just peddling stuff. The gentleman at the time was in the National Reconnaissance Office and retired from that and was working with the World Bank. John Maynard was his name.
Oh, okay.
And he actually worked with Dr. Greer at CSETI. He really, you know, his job was to disrupt, but he really kind of played both sides of the street. He wanted to keep people from getting hurt. And originally his job, you know, he had been tasked to pull me away from the Millennium Group because I was really generating a lot of traffic for them with my first article, which was King of Terror, got 5 million views. And he got me to set up Yowza, and I guess everybody thought that once I set up Yowza, I'd do it for a little while and then dribble off, and then that would slowly be the end of the Millennium Group. Well, when I left the Millennium Group, it was, and it wasn't because of him. It was because of the guy who was running it. It was a little bit of a control fella. And but once I got the bit in my mouth, that was it. I'm on a mission, all right? And it's a real simple mission. I see wolves out there and I see sheep, and I just try and be a good shepherd. I'm just trying to help the people who are the good, kind people who are having the dreams, visions, and premonitions to get through it, to survive it, because to me, they're God's chosen. And they're all, I've met thousands of them over the years through email and on the phone and in other different ways. And, you know, these are just kind of folks you want to have as neighbors. They're good people. And once they have the dreams, the visions, and the premonitions, nobody's going to bull feather them. All right. They know what they know. They keep going. And it's hard for them, for a lot of them. They lose their marriages over it because spouses get all freaked out by the topic. And then they go from some sort of deep ingrown of racial memory fear of rocks falling on us and killing us to, which is then funneled right into social programming, which says if you're not talking like a consumer, you are alien to this environment and to be treated as such. And then the spouses go into ego, and once they're in ego, it gets polarized and winds up in a divorce. I see that quite often, and I see these people just keep on going, and I see the sacrifices that they make, and it inspires me to continue doing what I'm doing and to make the sacrifices that I am. I am under attack. You can go look at, after I did my last video, Planet X 101, who, what, why, where, when, and how, in there, you get to the section that says 1988, a NASA astronomer by the name of Anderson admitted to the existence of Planet X. And he's still on payroll with NASA. I have that in the video, and once I published that video, and then they retaliated against me on Amazon, and what they did was Amazon flagged all my books as being temporarily out of stock, and they did that for 6 months running. Jeez. And so,
wow.
You know, what they do is they'll go at your income to shut you down. I have that. That's a problem, you know. The reason why my YouTube channel is still up is it is a corporation, and I present my material as infomercials. And so once you have an expectation of profit as a corporation, you have rights under the law that no individual citizen could hope to have. And it's why I do what I do. So, you know, eventually at some point, they'll find some way to attack me. But on the other hand, I will say to you that Google has actually pulled me out of the fire a couple of times. It's a strange thing in what I do. It's like a Louis L'Amour novel. I don't know if you ever read Louis L'Amour. It's fun to read. It's simple. It's the good guys wear black hats, the bad guys wear white hats, and the guys in the white hats always win and, you know, kiss their horse and ride off into the sunset. And, you know, what I see out there is a field of white hats and black hats, and they're all anonymous. The black hats and the white hats use the same resources. You know, you have people in government who don't deserve to get tarred with the same old brush. And that happens quite often. There are people in positions where they can do something, and if they can quietly do something, then they help out. So to the white hats out there, I know you're out there, and I know you helped me, and I thank you. And to folks of you who are having the visions, the dreams, and the premonitions, my life is in service to you. Because what we're really looking at here is a controlled extermination. The suppression of this topic of Planet X is for one purpose and one purpose only, to ensure the greatest possible dieback of the human species. We're talking about reducing it to perhaps 1 in 15 surviving.
Similar to the Jordan Guidestones that boast having a basically one world language with no more than 500 million people at any given time on the earth.
Yeah. What it is it's easier to manage a half a billion people. All right. One of the things I recently learned about the RFID tags that really broke my heart, they're not only going to be the mark of the beast in terms of you can't transact business or have a life without them, but a whistleblower told me that there's an undisclosed thing that they're doing with them besides tracking us and actually using them to create a human-wide global cloud, and they can program us. They want to dumb us down, make us stupid, so we're easy to manage. But the third thing that they're going to be able to do is they have identified the frequencies by which we communicate with our creator, the cosmic consciousness, whatever you want to call it, and the RFID tags can put a blocking signal out, and that's it. You are no longer going to feel the presence of God in your life once you are tagged.
That sounds like the Funvax. I don't know if it has any correlation with that, but there was something that looked like it was leaked out of the Department of Defense where there was a seminar and the guy was boasting a vaccine that would eliminate what he called extremist faith. It was something that would eliminate the faith gene, similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, God is an inconvenience for the elites. And so they just are going to program God out of the picture. And I find that to be a very sad thing. This is sometimes, you know, it's easy to be jocular and have the gallows humor. But there's a lot of... There's just a lot of stuff that's coming down the pike, and things that people don't want to think about and they don't want to consider. And so, you know, it's for the people out there, you know, it really boils down to, you know, I have folks that say, well, you need to get out to the folks that aren't interested and find a way to engage them. Well, hell, I've been trying to do that for 12 years. And all I've learned is people cling to the bliss of their ignorance like jealous lovers. That's the truth of it. And that's the reason why I call the folks that are having the dreams, the visions, and the premonitions. And it's very similar. You know, I've read... Like I said, contacted thousands of them over the years, 12 years now of hearing it. I see, you know, impact events, tsunamis, tornadoes. They see these things, and they see them in such vivid experiences. It's just IMAX clarity, and they remember these. It's not like you have a dream at night and then you get up, and, you know, first thing, you know, you sit down in your dream journal and you try and remember what you did and you write it out. No. When these folks have these experiences, it just infuses itself into their memory circuits. And they remember these things with absolute, utter clarity. I do. You know, the visions that I have been given, I remember them with clarity. And my first vision of this was a little over 31 years ago. And that's also another trend that I find, that the people who are having the dreams, visions, and premonitions have been having them for a long time. Age-wise, they tend to be around 45 to 65. And
are you having the same, are you having the exact same dreams? I mean, are you seeing the same tidal waves at the location, the exact location, or are they vaguely similar?
There's times when they'll have the same recurring dream or vision. That's the case, the one that happened to me 31 years ago. I had it for every night for almost 6 months. And it was a very unpleasant thing. It always started out the same way. It's I wrote a book, God's Child Covenant, Return of Nibiru, back in 2002. And it really describes the vision, the whole setting. It was it always would start the same way. I was standing on a small hill and looking up at the sky. The sky was orange, red, streaked with black. The air was somewhat warm, gritty, smelling of sulfur. You have all senses in these visions. Then I looked down and I saw before me, everything was defoliated. It was just dead trees and dirt. That was it. No green anywhere, just dead trees and dirt. Before me was a very steep gorge cut through a mountain of about 300 feet. And there was a road coming through there, a highway, and people were walking through that gorge, some pushing carts with other people on them. They were wrapped in bed linens, and I could see them that they had a lot of ulcers on their skin, which are called, actually, it's one of the plagues of 10 plagues of Exodus, Shechem. It's from volcanic ash. And the important thing people need to remember about that when it happens is that you just don't leave it on the skin. You'll develop these terrible, terrible, terrible Shechem. And so if you don't have water to wash them off, use clean dirt or clean clay. But these people were coming. They were emaciated. Their bodies were covered with Shechem. They were wrapped in linen. They walked quietly. They didn't speak. They didn't seem to have the energy or the inclination or anything. They were just going to this facility, which was a triage facility, where they would either be determined to be salvageable and of use, and at which point, if they wanted, then they would be trucked out of there to a recovery area. But otherwise, if they were let into the camp, they were let in specifically so that they could do end of life. And they had three choices for end of life. They could go to the rear of the camp in a tent city, and they were given fresh water and cannabis, and just allowed to waste away and die somewhere, just laying around in the tents. Or if the ones that had more advanced conditions, particularly the ones that were had upper respiratory infections, they would go to bunkers, and there they would be given a heroin IV drip that they could control themselves. And when they finally decided that they had had enough, they would just remove the clip off the feed and just take it straight and go. And then the third option for them was there was a trench that would be dug, and they would kneel at the trench, and a man would come behind them holding a small caliber 22 pistol. And he would put his left hand on their left shoulder. And if they were ready to go, they would lower their head, their chin to their chest as a gesture of saying, I want this. And then the releaser would put the pistol to their head and shoot through the medulla oblongata, which is, snipers call it the apricot. And if you're shot through the medulla oblongata at that range, you're actually going to be dead before you would actually hear or feel anything else. It's just that instantaneous. It's just instant switch off. And then the bodies would fall forward into the trench, and they would be covered with lime and then dirt, and then the next group of people would come forward. Those that decided that they didn't want to go at that point were free to just stand up and walk away, and they could return. Once somebody went to those trenches, they would keep returning and never went more than three times. So this was the vision that I had been given night after night after night. Always started exactly the same way, exact same thing, exact everything. I could do anything, get drunk, get stoned, wake up a dozen different times. If I woke up, went back to sleep, the dream resumed, no different than if I had put it on pause play. And so that's what these visions can be like. And it was perfect IMAX clarity. I mean, more than IMAX clarity. I was there. I was in it. Yeah. I could feel the breeze on my skin. I could smell the sulfur in the air. I could feel the grit. So that's what these people go through. But the purpose of getting the dreams early is that it is the universe's way of getting you into an evolution as a human being. You have what some might call a kundalini ascension. And this is the reason why a lot of the people who have dreams, visions, and premonitions wind up in their marriages fail, because they grow. You know, they are no longer the person their spouse married. They're they're from K-Pax and they're eating banana skin and all. You know, it's like aliens abducted them and left this weird clone substitute. But really what's happening is that they're becoming far more spiritual in their lives, in their world perception. And they evolve in their spirit and in their thinking and in everything that they do. And consequently, they diverge from their spouses dramatically. They grow away from them. And so they're never the ones to make threats. It's the spouses that are in a state of fear, the ones that make threats. But interestingly, I find that once, particularly those who have decided to bust a move to get to safe ground, do that. They're the ones that file, not for any of the bad behaviors that the spoiler spouses are doing, which I've seen terrible behavior. I've seen spoiler spouses using infidelity and mental cruelty and other things as an excuse for, their behavior in response to this kundalini ascension, if you will, on those who are having the dreams, visions, and premonitions. It's very sad. Only one in four couples or one in five couples are you going to find where the husband and the wife are both in awareness together. And in those cases, they're incredibly, incredibly fortunate people. And, you know, what I'm doing now on my website at YOWUSA.com is I have three qualifying products, and I'm doing complementary survival relocation analysis, and really just helping them with the basic mechanics of, okay, where are you and where do you want to go? What's your radius? And, helping them to get started. And then after that, their next step is a reconnaissance. And I make the offer at 15 minutes so that if I have someone who's disingenuous or disrespectful, then I can cut it short. But otherwise, I spend a lot of time with these people because that is my mission, to be in service to them. And it's really interesting, the things that I am learning from them, their experiences. Interestingly enough, the ones that have had the spoiler spouse experiences often remarry and find someone who is in awareness, and their lives go from misery to magic. That's one of the things people don't understand, is that this kundalini ascension that these ascension experience that these people are having is brings a lot of beauty to their lives. their sadness about what's coming, but then they feel their purpose, their mission with Creator. And I call them the backside elders. They're going to become the future medicine men and medicine women, if you will, the trusted advisors. They're going to, in small survival communities, they are going to be very much treasured and loved. And this is a very old human tradition. You know, it's sad in the West that we have this throwaway culture when it comes to seniors. And this is where it's really painful for a lot of these folks with their children or even with their grandchildren, because they know what's coming and they're in preparation. And their families are completely in denial, and they think old mom or old dad is as crazy as a peach orchard boar. And just as the spoiler spouse thing is just awful and dispiriting, I'm seeing now with the parents and the grandparents, the agony that they're going through, knowing that their children are living in cities that are going to be death zones. And terrible death zones. People have to understand that this is going to be a global cataclysm, and there will be cannibalism. All right.
Well,
there
and,
will
and
be
let me,
cannibalism. And
let me
so,
jump in here real quick, if
you
I'm
know,
again.
This is, let's say I'm in Reno, which is to me a very survivable place. I have a scale of 0 to 10, and I give Reno a 7.5. But if you were living in Las Vegas, I'd give it a 1. And that's generous. To me, Las Vegas, places like Las Vegas, Los Angeles, New York, any city that is an artificial creation that has to bring water in from long distances and energy is going to turn into a death zone. And you know you're going to have a very fast situation where supplies are going to dwindle out. And what people need to understand is that when this starts to happen, the government will implement it's called shelter in place is the term. And shelter in place is just a very quaint way of saying you live where you live or you die where you die. So if you're not there when you need to be there, you know, you have a real problem. You know, I see a lot of, you look at the wealthy. What a lot of people who are in denial about this topic don't realize is that in the upper echelons, you know, people that are making a few million dollars a year or more, the wealthy ones, they've got bunkers, 9 out of 10 of them. All right. Now, they do it not because they come to this from a spiritual standpoint. They're just simply, you know, familiar with the concept of dealing with risk. Taking risks, mitigating risks, managing risks. They've got the bunkers. And they're waiting for things.
Okay. We've got a lot of people that were asking questions about these visions that you were having and the details and such. And you've had the opportunity to speak with people, it sounds like, from all over the globe that have had different visions and such. With
yes.
your, as far as the percentage goes, I'm sure you have this well documented. What would you say the percentage is of people having these exact same visions and seeing the same things and the senses being the same? And I'm going to add one more question to that. How do you know that it's from Planet X and not from, you know, some nuclear reactor going off or a, you know, war or something like that?
What they're seeing are natural events. What they are typically seeing, the most commonly reported actually are tornadoes. It's interesting. What the spirits are doing, what the guides or God, if you will, is doing is giving these people something that they can relate to that will trigger them into awareness. All right. And so if you're living along a coastline, you're going to see tsunamis. All right. If you're living inland, in the flyover states, I tend to hear reports of tornadoes. I'm talking about really, really awful tornadoes. Fives and one right after another, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. And but also a lot of people in different areas will see impact events, and they'll see those impact events typically in the ocean more often than on the land, which is consistent because 71% of the surface of the planet is covered by water. But these are the things that, you know, floods, tornadoes, tsunamis, impact events, natural disasters is what they're seeing. They're not seeing nuclear mushroom clouds. That's not what is being reported. What they're seeing is natural events.
And these events that they're seeing, you feel are being caused from the planet X that is getting close to the Earth's orbit?
I'm not saying that Planet X itself is triggering the dreams. All right. What I think, based on what I have seen, is this is a consciousness event in response to what is coming. So Planet X is not the causality, if you will, it is the reason, but not the causality of these dreams. The causality of the dreams is God or the universal mind or the universal consciousness, whatever you want to call it, that higher power that is reaching out to these people and touching them. And there's other things that I find interesting. These people are not, they're not your typical churchgoers, devout churchgoers. These are the people that tend to get kicked out of churches because they ask questions that are on the, that are not on the thou shalt only ask questions from this list, okay? They're asking the questions that, the guys that are, getting a piece of the pie, if you will, to stand between you and God and to explain things to you, can't explain. And so they get bounced out of churches. And that's part of the whole process that they go through. That is the reason why I say, you walk humbly with your God. It was kind of funny how things work out. When I was growing up, my mother read Micah 6:8 and was rather taken by it, but felt that the translations just didn't work for her. And so she wrote it a little differently. And the way she wrote it, I call it Lori's prayer, is it hath been told thee, all men, and what is good and what the Lord doth require thee, to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. And what I have come to realize in this point of my life is what my mother had taught me as a child is the watchword for the chosen, those that have been reached so that they would have this long, and we're talking about these people have had these dreams and visions for a long time. And so they're experiencing this and they're growing into it. So I see that you have a question from the chat room. Does the Skyview team have a time frame for the approach of Nibiru? They are posting their observations. And what we can say is there's one astronomer, Carlos Ferrada. He's a professional Chilean astronomer. In 1940, he began talking about Planet X. And, what he told us is that this has an orbit that defies our understanding of astronomy. This is an object that behaves its own way. And from what we have seen, that's the truth. In terms of, where it's going, I can say it's observable from Turrialba right now. We've had one verified observation from North Carolina that we're going to be reporting on in our next, in one of our coming videos. So, people say, when am I going to see it? When am I going to see it? And, to be honest with you, excuse me, but it's just disingenuous nonsense. I hate it when I get these people that come beat their chest. I'm going to go to Costco. I'm going to get a telescope. I want the coordinates. Tell me where. I want it now. And they do this like dumb monkeys. In October of last year, Skyview posted a video and they said, go look here tonight at 8 o'clock, find this star, find this planet, draw a line between them. It's right in the middle. If you have a good pair of binoculars like 10 by 50s or your Costco telescope, you'll see it. And what happened was that video was pulled off of YouTube. Their account was compromised within 24 hours. And all of the chest beaters that were going, show me, show me, show me, where the hell were they? Nowhere. They were busy going to the mall. So, I mean, I really get tired of it when people are going, give me a date, give me a date, give me a date, because that's denial nonsense. That's somebody going, all right, I want to be clever. You see, I'm going to go to the store on the day before that, max out my credit card so I got mine, and to hell with everybody else. And that's the kind of stupid logic that is just going to get these people killed anyway.
Well, so, you know, there's a
lot. All I'm telling you is we've got it observed. We put it up there. We put all our observation data. We publish everything. We're totally forthcoming and transparent, unlike certain governments. And, you know, people still, they got this date fixation.
So when is it going to affect everyday life, though? Because, you know, obviously.
It already is, bucko. Jeez, wake up and smell the seismicity. There's seismicity all over the freaking planet. Hot springs popping up, sinkholes.
You don't think that has anything to do with the fracking and the chemtrails and all the toxins that are being released from the not only petrochemicals but giant factories in China that are producing dollar Happy Meal toys?
You know, this whole blame it on anthropomorphic causes, I mean, this is Al Gore, you know, an inconvenient omission, as I call it. It's as we reported back in, you know, first off, it's what's happening is we're in a binary star system, soul, smaller twin, a brown dwarf, five times the size of Jupiter is coming in, and the two objects are interacting already, and the sun is more radiant, and that is what is pounding hell on us. And I saw this back in the 90s. It's what brought me into this research. I was doing business in Russia. I would fly over on Aeroflot over the pole every December and return in January. And the first time I did it, in my first return trip in 1993, I remember looking at the North Pole, the Arctic, and it was beautiful. It was white, pristine, clean. I'd never seen blue ice in my whole life. I grew up in Arizona. In Arizona, blue ice is something you go to 7-Eleven, they put ice in a cup and they put some blue sauce on it or something. That was what I knew from blue ice. I was seeing it. I was just sitting there in this Aeroflot airliner, which, by the way, are more comfortable than Boeing. And I was just mesmerized for hours. And then I did this over the years. That was 93, 94, 95, 96, 97. Last flight was January 99. And by my time, it was, and I saw a steady deterioration of the Arctic. And on my last flight, the Arctic looked like the busted windshield of a car in a wrecking yard. And when I looked at that, and I heard all of this anthropomorphic nonsense, I'm going, bullshit. Something else is causing this. We got to figure it out. And that's what led us to Planet X. I'm a Mensen. I have a genius IQ, which means I just wind up tend to get myself into trouble more often than not. I got together with a couple other Mensens, and we started really digging into it. Yeah, we didn't have our situation where somebody could stick a thumb in our rice bowl. We were independent researchers, and we could just go for the truth. Who'd have thunk it? And we researched it, and we were looking at everything. And one of the questions we said, well, okay, if this is actually solar, then it would stand to reason that any planet in our system with an atmosphere is having surface perturbations, weather perturbations like us. And sure enough, everything with an atmosphere was. And so it is solar. Yeah, anthropomorphic causes are exacerbating this trend and at the same time reducing our defenses immensely, immensely. You know, you give a deadly flu to a 19-year-old and then you give it to a 99-year-old, the 19-year-old's got a better chance of making it. And what the elites have done to our planet with all of this pollution is we got a 99-year-old biosphere. Our magnetosphere is dimming, you know, our everything. Our planet just simply doesn't have the health to take a heavy hit like it used to. It just doesn't have it. And so when the guacamole hits the fan, it's going to hit hard.
How would you explain?
People can imagine.
How would you explain all the chemtrails, the mass amounts of geoengineering that's going on right now? Would you say that that is to manipulate the weather, or is that more to protect the Earth from the coming cataclysms because of the Nibiru that you're talking about seeing coming close enough to the Earth to cause even more upheaval?
Chemtrails are, there's many reasons for the chemtrails. First, the aluminum dumbs us down a little bit and also makes us weaker, more susceptible to disease. So that will also help increase the dieback. But right now, it's from what I'm seeing, there's more of an economic purpose, and it's one of the reasons why I left California. I moved out of Santa Cruz for a number of reasons. One, the radiation from Fukushima. The Pacific is going to be dead in a few years. Already in California, they're seeing terrible wildfires, particularly down in the San Diego area. And it's going to be a bad fire season this year. Late last year, I met a man who is a specialist. He was cutting trees for the Forest Service as fire breaks. And he was the guy that they would bring in for the real tough jobs because he was a real maestro with a chainsaw. And one of the things he said to me that really stunned me, because I know the redwood trees there very well. I love the redwoods. And he said, the redwoods, which are very fire resistant, it's the reason why people like them for patios. The trees had become so dry that he was seeing them burn for the first time in his life. All right. When the redwoods are burning, that's bad, bad business. That's really bad, bad business. And so, you know, the chemtrail spraying, California right now, they say California is in a 500-year drought. It's an engineered drought. I have people that have been calling me and writing me from British Columbia, up there, not far from Alaska. And what they were reporting to me in December and January of this year was that normally that far north at this in that time of the year, they would have 4 to 6 feet of snow on the ground all the time, continuously. This year, they had absolutely no snow, just occasional rains. Shallow wells were going dry, and the salmon runs were down 75%. These are firsthand reports from British Columbia. And if you look at what's happening with the weather engineering, what they have done is they have used chemtrails to alter the course of the jet stream. There's an old expression by Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. And the reason for that was the jet stream used to come down right where the Golden Gate Bridge is. It would just come right in there. And you'd have the melt off in the summer, and that cold wind would come in, and then San Francisco would have very cold summers as a result of that. Well, what's happened is that the jet stream is no longer coming down there. The jet stream actually has been hijacked, and it is actually going above British Columbia and down. And what they're doing is they're moving the moisture towards the flyover states, because that's where all of the business interests are. We're very dependent. Our entire food industry is dependent on just a few single variety crops that are grown: corn, wheat, soy. And what they want to do is make sure that the moisture is there. So that's the reason why these people are seeing such awful winter weather and a lot of moisture, because they're getting actually what should have been staying in California. So the chemtrail spraying is pretty intense. I mean, I see it here in Reno because we have perfectly beautiful, clear skies here some days. Other days, I mean, you see the chemtrails, and they're laying them in grid patterns. You know, they look like big tic-tac-toe on the sky that just holds for a long, long time. And I've spoken with pilots who fly commercial airliners, one who is retired now from a major carrier. He was doing, he was a 777 driver, and he was doing the, his particular route was back and forth between Hawaii. And what he told me was that the 777s have a very sophisticated equipment bay, and he would bring his own equipment on board the aircraft and plug into it on one of the data ports. And what he was doing was he was seeing these chemtrails jets spraying, and he wanted to figure out who they are. And if you're a pilot, you'll know that everyone squawks. You have a transponder, and it's sending out a continuous signal so that air traffic control can find you, and other aircraft around you can also know that they can track you, so that it minimizes the risk of a collision. And what he found was that, because he was also a former military pilot, was that these jets that are doing the chemtrail spraying are not squawking. Their transponders are not squawking on any frequency used by civilian or military aircraft. They have their own air control system. So they're completely autonomous. And, you know, what they're doing is they're out there and they're spraying. And what the spraying is doing is, you know, there's weather modification. There's a lot of things. It's I find most interesting is when you see documentary producers trying to pigeonhole members of Congress about the chemtrail spraying. You know, they just run like rats. Nobody knows anything. Nobody wants to know anything. So this is a massive program that's underway, and there's more than one reason for doing it. But the one that prompted me to move out of California was I could clearly see that they know California is just a bone to be chewed. It's just not going to do well with it,
right,
with what's coming. And so they're moving the moisture. You know, in the time to come, you know, it's not going to be the oil importing states that hold the power. It's going to be the grain exporting states that hold the power, because hunger is going to be like that. And Americans are going to be really shocked to find out that they're going to be unable to afford basic things in the store, and they're going to have a hard time getting access to things, because there's going to be more lucrative markets overseas where there's people that are going to be willing to pay any price. And these people will come in and, you know, buy our harvests out. And so Americans, it's not going to be America first when it comes to the harvests.
Well, and let me jump in here for a second, too, because a lot of people have been saying this for quite some time. And if you look around, the petrodollar seems to be weaker on a monthly basis. You know, a lot of these wars, people speculate why they actually happen. We can get into that on another episode. But when is it going to actually happen to the point to where Bob and Jane can't go to the store and buy groceries without having to literally scrape up all their money just to pick up a couple of top ramens or something like that. Back in Germany before World War II, when the market tanked and it took barrels of cash to go pay for a loaf of bread, stuff like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, it's only a few years away. And so, and what people out there really need to understand is that every day you spend in denial, every day you postpone your planning and preparation, every day you stay in a place where you know you're unsafe, and you do not bust a move, as I call it, and I call it busting a move because you have to bust up your life to do it. But every day that you do that, you're going to have fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer options, and you're going to have less money, and it's not going to go as far as it did before. And so you're going to pay the price of procrastination in ways that are going to make you, for those of you that are listening to this and going, well, I just don't know about that. I'm going to wait to see. I'm going to wait for to hear on CNN. I'm going to wait for this. By the way, you want to wait on CNN? I used to be a science feature producer for CNN years ago, back when it was really a news agency. Now it's just, to me, it's a Soviet era Pravda.
Let me ask you, this is really important. I'm glad you brought this up, Marshall, because a lot of our listeners probably didn't know that. I know you have regulars that listen to your shows and listen to your videos, but for our listeners, the fact that you did work for CNN, I got to ask you a couple of questions about that. I did see Congress back in the day that admitted the intelligence agencies actually funded them to produce certain materials to cause certain reactions and responses within the populace. So do you have any inside information on that, or did you ever actually have first-hand contact with alphabet agencies telling you to put out certain news reports for a certain agenda?
When I was there, Ted Turner was running the show. All right? These were the early days. These were the mid-80s. And Turner was a son of a bitch, but he was a fantastic son of a bitch. Okay? He ran a lean, mean news organization, and they didn't kiss anybody's tuchus. That was the days when things were independent. But what happened was the FCC, and it's the FCC who is, they're getting ready right now to destroy net neutrality. And what they did back then, which was a horrible crime against the nation, was that there had been a longstanding rule. You could only own a limited number of radio stations, media outlets. It was like 7 media outlets. And so, consequently, when I was with CNN, there were 50 different major companies in the media doing news. It was very competitive, and you had to go out there and get the good stuff. And I was working in the science department. By the way, CNN, I think, closed their science division 10 years ago. All right. It got in the way of profits. And but once the FCC did that, then what you had was these big corporations like Clear Channel. If you want to know why you're hearing Bill O'Reilly or, the disc jocks, okay, and the ones that are out there, with the angry rhetoric day after day after day, and they're everywhere all across the country. And it's because what happens is Clear Channel, once the FCC, and by the way, that rule was made by the son of Colin Powell. Colin Powell, the guy that got us back. Well, his son destroyed news in the country. He destroyed it. He single-handedly did it. It was one little bureaucrat. It was an inside job. It was absolutely a mole. And what they would do then is they would go into local markets, and they had money. and they could go to a small station and say, we'll set up our own station here and we'll kill you. Or you can sell out for a lot of money and go have a nice time in the Bahamas for the rest of your life. And so these small station owners would take the money and run. And then what they would do is they would go in, and the first thing that they did was they would go into the head end, all the broadcast equipment, and they would install their feed box from their network, wherever that was. And once the feed box was installed and ready to go, they'd flip it on, and there was no more local programming, or maybe just a little bit of it. But the next thing they would do after that is they would keep everybody in the sales department, but they would fire the news department. That's it. No more local reporting. They all got fired. They all got pushed out. And so now what happens is that we have five corporations, not 50, like when I was in media, that are shaping the entire message. And so it's, you know, it's, I don't care who, it's just what flavor of propaganda do you want?
Well, you know, when you've only got five flavors, there's obviously not much selection. So that's why I was going to say who's controlling the five.
Yeah, that's probably even fewer people, you know, so yeah, you have these huge media empires and they control everything. And these media empires are all, you know, it's all, there's all of this duplicity and back scratching with other elites. You know, we don't have, people seem to have this, cling to this notion that we have a capitalist democracy. Bull. We don't have. We have what I saw when I was in Russia. Okay? We have an oligarchy. You got a few billionaires that are getting all the money and all the power, and they're pulling all the strings. And everybody else is they're fighting over the crumbs. Hell, you got one family, the Walls, and their wealth is the equivalent of the bottom 60% of the country put together. Just one family has as much money as 60% of all the people living in the country put together.
Yeah, there was an article just the other day about that.
Yeah. So there is, and you know, you can get out there and you can say, you can, you know, let's fight it. Let's turn it around. Forget about it. This is the cycle of empires. This is a timeless thing. It's what brought Rome down. It brought down other empires. As empires rise up, they're popular with their populace because everybody's getting a piece of the action. And there's opportunity. But then they reach their zenith, and at that point, the elites step in, and then they start consolidating the wealth and the power into their own hands. And they drain all the vitality out of the body politic. And so what happens is all you have to have is some sort of calamity that comes along that when the empire was young and in its prime, it could have easily overcome. But once it has had all its vitality sapped out of it, it just collapses overnight. That's it. Boom. Just falls like a doll rag. Yeah. I mean, for example, in Rome, you used to be, when Rome was in its ascendancy and its glory years, fathers would say to their sons, come home on your shield or with it. In other words, die in battle or come back a victor. You know, but the corruption, just no different than the corruption that we have now, was so pervasive that the middle class just stood aside and said, okay, you know, to the invaders, come on in. So we'll have the same thing here. I mean, if I were a parent now, I would be mortified if my child said, I want to be all that I can be and join the army. I'd say, what, to go die for Monsanto? To go die for an oil company? No.
Good point. It seems as if Monsanto, you know, is very well funded in, you know, Agent Orange is where they made a lot of their money back in Vietnam, and now they're putting food in the lunchrooms for kids' cafeterias. It's it's incredible how things change like that. And I'm glad you brought that up. I really am, and I know that you are quite an expert in survival and locations to go. Also, Mr. Masters, you know, with all your information out there for our listeners as well, if you could share with us some locations that would be you see as a safer alternative versus being in a large city or maybe somewhere geologically speaking wouldn't be a geographically speaking wouldn't be a good area.
Well, what I can tell you is that there's fewer and fewer areas. All right. When I do an analysis with people, it's a broad spectrum of issues and things in terms of helping them and how do they transition? What do they do for, you know, to find a place that is going to, wherever you're going to go when you get there, it really needs to feel like home. You'll know when you get there. But if you're on a coastline right now or within 40 miles of a coastline, East Coast or West Coast, you need to get the hell out of there. You need to bust a move. If you're sitting on the New Madrid Fault, you need to bust a move. If you're close to Yellowstone, you need to bust a move. But, you know, if I were to say where is, you know, where would be an area, certain parts of Appalachia. Otherwise, if I had the money, I would move to Canada. I'd say Canada, you know, up there north of the mid-states, the middle of Canada from the U.S. border up for about 300 miles. That would be the ideal place you want to go to. Otherwise, what I'm really trying to do with folks when I do a survival relocation analysis is to find something within 500 miles of where they're living. And here's the reason why. First off, it's a one-day drive. So that's going to help you. Now, in terms of places like Ohio, Pennsylvania, first off, wherever there are fracking fields, death. Period. I used to be able to tell people that were in New York, for example, I'd say, hey, look at Pennsylvania. Because Pennsylvania is really ideal, or used to be. You know, what you're looking for in your best areas is soft earth, deep artesian water, rolling hills. Those are the three things you really want to find in an ideal situation. And with enough elevation, either you're inland far enough, at least 40 miles inland, or from a Great Lake, you know, a few thousand feet up, and, you know, soft earth, rolling hills. But you have to get into it. It's like, I'm just hesitant right now to say any one particular area because I am finding as I'm doing this analysis with the folks that I'm helping is it is getting really flipping hard. You got to, you know, you have to look in terms of where are nuclear plants.
Right.
Where are they doing the fracking? Then you have other stuff, industrial concerns. Now, remember, once this thing breaks loose, no structure on the face of the planet is going to survive it. All right. And so you're going to have all of these tea kettle reactors that we have out there with these huge pools. And that is going to be just terrible for anybody living in those areas. The fracking is, that's just awful. I mean, huge tracts of land that were once, to me, prime survival land they're going to be death lands because the concrete casings in the wells are all going to fail with any kind of real seismicity, which is going to happen all across the globe. Everything's going to become, we're seeing global seismicity now. You know, just the other day, Oklahoma had a 5.0 and they're going, hell, we never saw one of those before. You know, something, what's wrong with this picture?
Right.
You know, in Yellowstone, there's, you know, what they're doing, the government is doing is, you know, like children who jump into bed and pull the covers over their head and said, aha, I locked the closet door and I left the light on. The monsters can't get me now. All right. But
is it true about Yellowstone? Is it true about Yellowstone? I'm sorry. I just had to.
The reports that we're seeing is that the bison are leaving. There is.
And aren't they taking nuclear missiles out of there, too? Weren't they making a claim that all the nuclear missiles around that area, the silos, are being.
The silos, from what I understand, they're going to stay warm, but they are taking the nuclear missiles out of the silos.
Well, they would, you know, I would say that's a wise thing to do, and because there is the report that really concerned me the most is that there is a geologist, a retired geologist, who's there, and he has his own seismograph, and he's monitoring what's going on, and what he has reported is that there's a lot of micro swarming, ones and twos, that are happening in the caldera itself, which is an indicator that the caldera is filling. That is not a good sign. So also bear in mind, you know, I began reporting on Yellowstone in 2003 when it went on the red list. I mean, it has been on the red list for an eruption event for 11 years, guys. And as a matter of fact, with my own podcast, Cut to the Chase, my very first guest, all right, was the guy that predicted the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake that hit during the World Series. And I know that really well because I was just a few miles south of the World Series in an industrial park when that thing hit. And I can tell you, it's not a very pleasant experience. So I had him on, and, you know, back then, in that very first interview I had, Jim Berkland, he said, when the buffalo start leaving, that's it. It's a bad sign. Well, there are reports coming that the buffalo are leaving, and, of course, there's cover-up spin that says, well, it's just natural migration. These animals don't look like they're migrating. They look like they're getting the hell out of Dodge. They're not following, you know, their old trails that they're following, they've been following for centuries. They're following the roads because the roads are the fastest way out, and they're going at a pretty good clip. So you have this building there. It is consistent with hot springs that are popping up, volcanoes. There's a tremendous amount of volcanism and seismicity. The seismicity is driving the volcanism from what we can see. So all of the signs are out there. Now, you know, it's still the same. You know, people are going to stay in denial of this because, like I said, people cling to the bliss of their ignorance like jealous lovers. And so even though you're seeing and reporting on all of this, it doesn't make a difference. It only makes a difference from what I have seen for people that are either what I call perceptives. These are the ones that are in planning and preparation because they are familiar with risk. Either they're wealthy or people who cater to the wealthy or are in security agencies or work with security firms, investment firms. These are the ones that perceptive. In other words, they're the ones that are looking at these reports and they're going, this ain't Kansas, Toto. I need to do something. All right. Meanwhile, the ones that are getting the dreams, visions, and premonitions, they're looking at that and they're going, this ain't Kansas anymore, Toto. And everybody else is going, hey, is I Love Lucy on? Yeah, let's watch Dancing with the Stars. This is bullshit. Fear porn. Whoop, 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 whoop. Fear porn. Fear porn. And that's what they're doing. So it's, you know, I just, the people that are in planning and preparation, whether they are on the spiritual path and in awareness, or they are perceptives who are just simply smart enough to see what's happening in the world around them, they are not asking me for when's it going to happen. They're just getting ready. That's all. They're getting ready. When it comes, it comes. And if it doesn't come, great. The ones that are asking me, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? Are the ones that want to wait until the very last minute to get out there before all the dummies hear it on CNN so that they can max out their credit cards at Walmart. Ain't going to work. Ain't going to work as planned. Yeah, so if you're not doing it now and you're not in a place where you need to be now. And another thing that you need to consider as to wherever you're going to move to is you want to be able to own a piece of land. Ideally, something that's in an unincorporated area, something that is far enough away that you're not going to have utility companies that can run a line to the house. Because we have a growing authoritarian government. I don't recognize what our government has become. It is really turning into this, it's spying on us in every way imaginable, telling us it's for our own good. Nonsense. Nonsense.
Well, and how much time do you think it is before they do this mandatory RFID thing? Do you think that this is going to be based upon if they do come out and say Planet X is closed?
They're not going to do it now, not while we're fat, dumb, and happy, because people are going to really, well, you're putting that in my body. You're putting that in my body. No, I'm not going to. And everyone's going to be nasty about it. So they're doing RFID tags in babies, so parents don't have to worry about abductions, pets getting lost. I'll tell you when RFID tags are really going to go into effect. It'll be after we are into this. It'll be after Nibiru is in the sky and people see it. They're all pointing up and they're peeing their pants. But they're not even going to do that at first. At first, they're going to look at that and the government's going to say, don't worry, it'll just fly by. It's not going to bother us. And people are going to go with that. Yeah, you know, trust me. I see the power of human denial. And people will go, okay, the government does it. There's a great movie, Melancholia. And in it, there's this wealthy guy who is convincing his wife that this planet is not going to crash into Earth and kill everybody. And he has a stick and he puts a wire hoop on it and he holds it out there and he says, see, and the wife buys into it. And he's doing it because in the final day, he doesn't want to die with his wife and his child. He wants to go into town and die in the arms of his mistress. And so he's lying to his family and the wife is going along with it. And that is the power of human denial. So even when it's being seen, people are still going to be in denial about it. And, you know, the government is telling us this and the government's telling us that. And they wouldn't lie to us about something like that, of course. They wouldn't lie.
No, never, never.
Never. But that's what will happen. The RFID tags are not going to happen because of Nibiru. The RFID tags are going to start happening because there will be food shortages.
So people are going to get hungry.
And they're going to be desperate.
Okay.
And then all they got to do is you go to the grocery store and they say, we need to scan your tag, otherwise we can't sell you anything. What are you going to do?
You know, and a lot of people speculate that HARP and some of these other giant radio tower looking structures are used to create some type of frequency in conjunction with the foods and the additives, etc. Do you think that if they do this chip thing that you were talking about and one of these whistleblowers was telling you, they'll be able to go on a full scale, I guess, at least a nationwide scale, where they could literally numb the populace down via radio frequencies and they thought it was actually some type of, you know, cell phone frequency?
No, what they're going to do is they're going to use the, RFID tags. All right. First off, let's talk a little bit about technology for people, because these RFID tags are about the size of a large grain of rice. Okay. And now, have you ever used an earbud, a Bluetooth earbud with your cell phone?
Well, I don't, because it's like putting a cell phone tower next to your ear. But I know people that do that, yes.
Okay. Now, what you have to understand is you look at the real estate of how that little thing is used, and it's like I got one, it's an inch long, little Plantronics. Now, the power circuits are what take up most of the room. All right? You have the battery. Then you have that little port for plugging in the charger. And then you have the microphone. And this is what's taking up 90% of the room in that little device. The smallest piece and the most essential piece is actually the Bluetooth transceiver itself. Because remember, it sends and receives. That is the size of a grain of rice. Now, if you plant one of those into the human body, the body generates enough electricity to light a 100-watt bulb.
Right.
It's right out of the matrix. You know, that's it. They're harvesting humans to generate power. Well, in fact, that's what we do. Our bodies do that. So you talk about, you know, microvoltage with a small Bluetooth device. You know, on the other hand, you put a transceiver into somebody's body that's generating enough power to light a fluorescent bulb. Wow, that's something. So what do you use that for? Because you can send and you can receive. Well, it's going to be transmitting information that can be scanned and picked up off you within a certain range. Bluetooth is about 30 feet, but probably these will be more. However, on the other hand, you would have all of these units, like little mini cell towers, if you want, all over the place. They're going to be scattered everywhere, picking up and sending and transmitting, but they can also transmit from a satellite. And what they'll do is that they will beam down programming. And what will happen is that RFID tag that is in your body is going to receive this neural network programming. And it is going to go straight into your brain. And it is going to program you to think whatever the elites want you to think. So not only are they going to use it to track each and all of your locations, they're going to program you. And what they're going to program you to do is be docile and subservient.
And make, you know, 300 million people perfect candidates to do whatever they wanted, you know, have a certain
And what they want is to ensure the single maximum largest die-off. Look, the elites are already, everybody's going, you know, what am I going to do about this flyby? What am I going to do about the pole shift? What am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about this? Elites had these conversations decades ago. They're everything. They're built out. They got everything. They're ready to rock and roll. And what they're going to do is very, very simple, guys, is that they want to come out and maintain control. So once we get to the backside, I call the backside, that's when we see blue skies again. They're going to come out of their deep underground military bases, and they're the ones that are sitting there, and they've got places like the Doomsday Seed Bowl in Svalbard. Now, the power has to have some sort of basis, a commodity basis in control. And in a post-historic world, gold and silver are not going to be, people can't eat gold and silver. You got a can of peaches, you got a box of 12-gauge shotgun shells, now we're talking. All right. So they're going to come up out of the bunkers, and what they're going to say to everyone that survives and whatever few governments survive, it'll be real simple. They're going to say, hey, you are free to starve on your own, or you will submit to us, and then we will provide you with medicine and food. And that's it. Go to the Svalbard Seed Vault. You know, Bill Gates, the most successful billionaire monopolist in the world, is the poster child for the project. And who's funding it? Corporations like Monsanto. Are they saying on the front of it, we are going to share this wealth of genetic legacy freely and with love with the population? No, you ain't going to find that anywhere on their site. And you're not going to find any GMO seeds in their vault.
So Monsanto's cafeteria is.
That is the reason why. Every time I get a chance on the air, I say, I don't give a damn where you buy them from. Folks, get heritage seeds. Because it's not about feeding yourself. It's about staying free. It's just that simple.
Well, and a lot of people think that they need acres worth of crops in order to survive, but it seems like a lot of people are being creative now and able to grow gardens within their apartments. Have you done any research into that? Do you have different setups and blueprints and stuff you offer?
Well, you know, that for me, I find people who are in planning and preparation are very adept at doing the beans, bunkers, and bullets, as I call them. My focus right now is on the spiritual side. And how do people spiritually prepare for this? That's important. I'm not talking about, you know, getting a Gideon's Bible in your backpack. All right. What I'm talking about in spiritual preparation is that people have got to be able to, we've got to go back to a time when we could connect with our Creator. And that is really important. We're not going to have smartphones and cell phones. You know, I find it amazing when I go flying and go through an airport today, and the term slavetronics explains it so beautifully. You don't see people talking to each other. You know, I go through an airport terminal that's absolutely jam-packed with people everywhere, and all I can hear are janitors moving around in the air conditioning system and occasionally someone calling flights. And otherwise, you don't hear people. They're all looking at their tablets, their smartphones. They're listening to music on their iPods. They're all tuned out and looking down. Take all that away from them. What's going to happen? They're going to be lost. They're going to have to find one another one again. All right. And that is going to be the hard thing. And, you know, there are a lot of people that tell me, well, if it's going to be that bad, Marshall, I'd just as soon be one of the first to die. My answer is, thank you. Better you than someone I care about. Because what we're looking at is when it does happen, it's not going to be a year or two. You're looking at a decade-long event. And the only thing that's going to pull you through that is the ability to walk humbly with your God. And you will then find the places of safety. You will find the purpose. And it will be about being in it for the species, about helping each other. You know, the folks that are building bunkers and stocking them up with 2-year supplies, I think they're very tragic people. And here's why. If you're looking at a 10-year extended event, after 2 years, they're going to come up from underground to forage. They have to. They'll be out of supplies. And by that time, whoever's left on the surface is going to be people who know how to melt away into the background and to defend themselves. And the cannibals. There will be cannibals. You know, there's a movie with Viggo Mortensen, The Road.
I was thinking about that movie just a minute ago, actually.
And that movie, for me, is brutally hard. I've watched it twice now. And I cry through it quite often. Because whoever did that, if somebody had come to me and said, Marshall, paint a future, that is 95% of what I would have done. That's what it'll look like. And you're going to have the cannibals, and they're going to be out there. And at first, there's going to be a lot of dead bodies laying around. But then that is going to, that's going to dry up. Then they're going to have to go on the hunt. And whoever's living on the surface, and you're going to be living on worms and grubs and tree bark and whatever the hell else, you're going to eat things you wouldn't believe that you could eat. And so, consequently, your flesh is going to be a little, say, gamey for them. On the other hand, the people that the bunker bunnies are going to be coming out of their bunkers. And these are going to be people who have spent the last 2 years sitting there wondering what it's going to be like and watching The Sound of Music and eating well. And so they're going to be the sweet meat, and they'll be easy to track. They're not going to understand how life has changed on the surface. Like I said, they've been underground watching The Sound of Music for 2 years. They'll be the ones the cannibals are really going to go for. They're going to hunt them down, and they'll beguile them, make them think that, you know, oh, we found somebody on the surface that's really good, and then boom, they're going to be eaten piecemeal, just like in that movie. Because if your food resource is getting scarce, you don't want to, you want to have fresh meat. And so, you know, they take a foot, a thigh, a forearm, an arm, and work their way down to the sweetmeats until finally they just have a banquet on the sweetmeats and use a sharpened spoon to poach out the eyes so that they can enjoy them like oysters. And that is the kind of reality that is going to be. And so people who are spiritual, on the spiritual path, I have every confidence that they have been chosen and they will be led away from these dangers. They will know how to deal with this. The bunker bunnies are just going to be, well, a weekly, just simply an entree on the hoof for the cannibals. And then the cannibals will go through that, and then they'll start feeding on themselves, and eventually they'll be gone. And what will be left are the chosen, the ones who've had the dreams, the visions, the premonitions. They'll be left, the meek. They will inherit the earth. I don't say that as a Christian. I'm not a Christian. I belong to the Church of Marshall. Got one on the rolls. We're not taking donations. We're not proselytizing, and thanks but no thanks, we don't do interfaith. But that's the way it's going to be. That's how the meek inherit the earth. And for those that say, well, it's not a problem for me, I'll be raptured out. Nah, ain't going to work. It's going to work as bad for you as it works for the people on the other end of the spectrum that are saying, this is going to be an ascension event. And one day we're all going to wake up and sing Kumbaya and buy the world of Coke. That ain't going to happen.
Well,
it's going to be a brutally hard time. But at the end of that, if the people who survive, and bear in mind, it's not going to go any better for the elites than it is for the people on the surface. They're in these deep bunkers, and these bunkers are going to be flattened. A lot of them are going to be flattened.
Marshall.
They're going to come to the surface, and they're going to be anachronisms. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just trying to jump in here because I think it's just kind of important at this point. I'm sorry to interrupt, but the question is, you had that vision that you talked about over and over and over again about these different sets of people that were either offered cannabis and a slow death, they were offered morphine and a quick death, or you know, a super fast shot in the back of the head. Is that going to take place? I mean, are people going to be offered that, or is it going to be more just a 10-year suffering period where people are going to have to go through situations like literally like The Road, that movie?
That's going to be – this is going to go in phases, all right? It's not going to be this convenient, okay, we're going to have the disaster tomorrow, and then in 3 days the power comes on and we go to the mall. Forget that. This is going to be – a slow motion train wreck that's going to go in stages. And so the triage is going to be the initial stage. What I see happening with our government is that we're going to have a bifurcation. You're going to see the government that goes below ground, which is going to have resources, and they're going to want to exercise their control on the government above ground by sending some of those resources up to the surface in a trickle. But I also see on the surface that there will be an attempt. I mean, there's a lot of good people in government, and I think a lot of good people in government are going to fight that. And they're just going to want to do what they can to be in service to people with what resources they have. But there will come a point where all of that just deteriorates and falls away. And, you know, it's going to go through these stages. And where, you know, government is just going to be, in most cases, government will just be a memory. People are going to learn to become self-reliant. Now, the thing is that it's going to be what you make of it. And there are people that are going to know where to go. They're going to know where to find safety because they have a connection with Creator that they have been nurturing and building as a result of being triggered by these dreams, visions, and premonitions. This is a long-term, as I call it, a kundalini ascension. And they have come to trust their inner voice and to follow it. And these are the ones that will pull through. And they're going to save a lot of others. And also what we're going to see is a tremendous amount of resourcefulness. There are countless men and women who have developed free energy devices. And we don't have free energy devices because we have these corporations that simply are making a lot of money by raping and pillaging the earth. And they buy up these patents and quash it or have these people put out of business. Well, there's a lot of talent that we have floating around, and we're very, very resourceful. And once these special interests no longer have governments to do their, you know, to do what they want for them, like, for example, look at what Monsanto is doing to destroy family farms all across the country. It's horrific. And it's all because our Supreme Court is just so corrupt. You know, at every turn, it is always weighed in favor on key issues with the elites and their agendas. The Supreme Court is what invented corporations as we know it today. It is the Supreme Court that gave corporations the power to be gods without responsibility. All right. So, to me, in a world without a United States Supreme Court, I see hope. I don't see these hypocrites in long robes who are on key decisions, doing things. You know, years ago, Anita Hill did everything she could to stop that, you know, Clarence Thomas nomination. And I remember watching all of that time. She was lambasted, but I kept looking at her face and I'm going, this woman's fighting like hell. And it's not for the reasons that she's talking about. She's just trying to derail this guy. And this is the son of a bitch who sold us out. This is the Black Hitler, future generations will remember. Clarence Thomas. He's the Black Hitler. He was a Monsanto mole, and he wrote the majority decision that gave Monsanto and other companies like that the power of gods to create life and to own it. And no doubt in my mind, she learned of his plans, pillow talk. He got a little drunk, got a little cocky probably one night, and he talked about what he was going to be doing, and it dropped her on her head, and she knew she had to fight it, do it anything she could. And so to me, now that I understand it in perspective of history, she's one of the most heroic people I could have ever imagined. Because Thomas is the Black Hitler. He's a psychopath for what he has unleashed on us with this GMO. And well, so
You say GMO, are you talking about which one? I mean, everything's GMO'd now.
Yeah, I know, but he's the guy. It was the enabling. You have to have an enabling legislation or an enabling decision.
Okay.
Something has to, you have to have, it's a Pandora's box, but it takes just a small key to turn the lock. And Thomas, Clarence Thomas, was the guy that turned the lock. Okay? He was the Monsanto, the former attorney for Monsanto, who was on the court, who should have recused himself for conflict of interest. And he, in fact, wrote the majority opinion on a 5-4 decision. Okay? And so, hey, you know, and look at our political process. They have, the Supreme Court turned right around and put our political process up for sale to the highest bidder.
Right.
Foreign corporations can come in, dump in money. I mean, it's just, that's it. You have Senate races where, or congressional races, $10 million in advertising in states that are relatively poor states. $10 million. And it's not coming out of the local economy.
And you also brought up earlier, Marshall, about how empires rise and fall. It's a cyclical process. And
that's right.
Rome fall, you know, how they fell, they outsourced their military amongst other things and just spent way above their means as far as resources. So look at America now and outsourcing their military, having microchips and very sensitive defense systems being built in China that can cause compromises, not only in the military industrial complex, but also in the civilian and, you know, the civilian commercial industry, the different sectors out there where they can get patents and they can pull that information directly out of computers because of these microchips and they can go back to them. So it's quite frightening. It really is. And we do need more spiritual awakening.
Let me tell you guys out there something. Let me tell you, all right? Because what the elites are capable of doing is very mighty and very powerful. But, you know, I came to really understand all of this back in, I think, 2005. That was when the whole picture, that was when the dime dropped, okay? 9 years ago. I can see all of it. All the dots connected. And it was a brutal time. I was depressed. I put on a tremendous amount of weight. And looking back on it, I think I just put on the weight because I didn't want to live to see it. But we were doing channeling research, and I was working with very gifted psychics, and we would have a team approach to it, and it was a conference call. I had two other researchers with me. One was feeding me cross-referencing questions, and the other one was feeding me science questions. And I was the one working with the channel, and we would be working with whatever entity, and they would be either incarnated, unincarnated, or extraterrestrial. Incarnated mean they had once at some time incarnated in human form. Unincarnated had never incarnated in human form and extraterrestrial. It was interesting. We would, with the extraterrestrials, we didn't do them that often, but when we did do it, what they were telling us all the time, and interestingly enough, these were races from the other side of the galaxy. You know, we were never in contact with someone that from Nibiru or Anunnaki, per se. These were races on the other side of the galaxy who were actually had the same message as the Hopi Prophecy Rock, which is, if you choose unwisely at this point, you're going to become a slave species for the remainder of your existence until finally, after your planet has been so badly exploited that it's of no interest to anyone else, you'll be free to die with your planet.
Have they been here before?
Huh?
Have they been here before?
The Anunnaki?
No, the ones that you were channeling.
No, these are races. The ones that were coming in with these particular gifted channels were coming in from such far distance away. And interestingly enough, one time, you know, I don't handle it in, you know, being reverent and, you know, trying to phrase things and thou shalts and whatever. I would just talk to them like I'm talking to you, and they liked it. And I was talking to one of them, and I just said, you know, okay, you've told me all of this. You're on the other side of the galaxy. So why are we having the conversation? What's in it for you? And the answer that came back kind of floored me. I wasn't expecting it. And they said, a lot of our relatives have incarnated in your form for this disaster. And so what is going to happen to us is a cosmic event. We, you know, if you've ever been on stage and the spotlights are on you, you're blinded by the spotlights and you can't see the audience. And we're blinded by the spotlight, but there's an audience out there. And there are ones out there that are pulling for us and others that have no more concern for us as beings than we do for farm-raised trout. And that's what's out there. And so, you know, you want to line up with the ones that are for you as opposed to the ones that are against you. But what we found most useful was we were working with entities, the unincarnated and incarnated entities. And with them, we had a very simple vetting protocol. And we would just say, give us an observable weather event 6 to 12 months out. Give us a weather prediction 6 to 12 months out. Every one of them gave us a prediction. Every prediction happened exactly as they said it would.
Could you name some of those for our listeners?
One event, for example, we were told you will see a typhoon heading towards in this particular month, a typhoon late in the season heading towards Baja, and it will turn towards in the direction of San Diego. It will likely exhaust itself before it gets there or make landfall very weakly. That's exactly what happened. It came towards Baja, turns towards San Diego, and exhausted itself. Another one said you're going to have your hurricane season is going to happen late. You're going to have several large storms, and they're going to happen in rapid succession, which was what happened. So those were examples of the kind of weather events that they gave us. And so we would do, you know, we would do our analysis. And then after we finished doing our analysis, we would just take it at face value. This is what you said. And then we would catalog, you know, the predictions. And sure enough, we would monitor the weather and that would happen. Those events would happen. And, you know, it was, we find that there are things that were difficult for them to describe to us because, you know, we would say, you know, just do you see this object, Nibiru, coming? And they'd say, yeah. Some were able to describe it. Others, you know, their understanding of what they were seeing and their ability to explain it was really based on whatever their past lives were and whatever experience they had.
What was that exactly? We'd love to hear about that.
Well, what they told us is that this object is on a very unstable orbit, both on its equatorial and its polar axis. And it's moving up and down and back and forth, and which is the reason why it has the wings. And so, you know, they were giving us that information back then. But the real thing that the channeling event that was really the most important to me, because at this point in time, I was very, very depressed. Okay, very depressed because to realize that this handful of elites were engineering a dieback of the species. You have to understand all of my family in Europe were killed in the concentration camps. Okay? And these sons of bitches basically, you know, want 15, want, you know, want 14 out of 15 people to take a shower. Because then they reduce the population to what they feel they can control. And it was just brutal for me. And so one day I was just tormented with it. And I asked this one channel, which is very gifted, and she could do multiple entities. Other channels could just do maybe two or three entities. She was just like a long distance operator. You know, boom, anything you want. And so she put it out there and what I needed. And the guide that came back was, had been a priest in the Egyptian, in an Egyptian, sanctuary, thousands of years ago by the name of Serapis Bey. Dumb luck. I even found him on, Wikipedia. You can find anything on the net. But Serapis Bey, you know, I explained what it was that was breaking my soul. And here's what Serapis Bey said in it. That was the day my life turned. And he said, the story of humanity is a large book of many, many, many chapters. And it is only half written. This chapter belongs to the elites. They own it. There is nothing you can do to take it away from them. Nothing. Do not waste your time trying. But this chapter, as all chapters and all books, is coming to an end. And they know this. And they know the next chapter is not their chapter. And the only way they can make it their chapter is if they can bluff you into letting it happen. In other words, if they can get you to sell your birthright for a bowl of lentils, they win. But the next chapter belongs to the meek, belongs to the good people. And it will be an enlightened future, but only if we are not to squander it. And so for me, I look at the population of people who follow my work and they're 45 to 65. And keep in mind, the most likely survivors are going to be folks in their 20s right now. But I want to help these people become the elders of the backside. The shamans, the medicine men, the medicine women, the wise advisors, the ones who understand how the elites do what they do and trick people, bluff them into giving away what is precious for baubles. And the more of these people that can make it to the other side, to just simply let people know, call the bluff. And you win. They don't have anything in their hand. Call the bluff. And they will fade away like anachronisms. And so when I look at what I'm doing and who I want to help, that's what I want to do. I don't know if I'll be there. I don't know if I'll make it. I sure as hell will try. But I'm in it for the species. And I don't want to see these bastards win, not on a bluff, not when they're holding nothing in their hand. And we're the ones holding a full, straight house, you know, a full house. And they got nothing. I don't want to see them win the bluff. It's just that simple. And if we walk humbly with our God, and we have the wisdom to understand their beguiling ways, that we can call their bluff, we win. and humanity will see the beginning of a new age, and it will be beautiful. It really will. It's not going to be some Mad Max Orwellian nightmare. It will be a beautiful age. But if in the odd chance we let them trick us into selling our birthright for a bowl of lentils, our future will be as written on the Hopi prophecy rock. We will be enslaved for countless generations to come. And after the planet has been so badly abused of its resources, we will be left to die with it in freedom. And this is what these races on the other side of the galaxy were pleading with us. Don't make the mistake we made. We let our elites bluff us. And we are having a terrible time of it.
And if they're on the other side of the galaxy, why are we so important to them?
Because their ancestors have incarnated in our form.
Right. So if, you know,
how do you think we went? 7 billion plus people, 7 billion souls on the planet. You know, we were less than a billion and up until the industrial age. At the end of World War II, we were 2 billion. 7 billion souls come out of nowhere. They got to come from somewhere. Okay? They got to come from somewhere. And so we are connected. We are connected to other species and other planets all throughout the galaxy. And what happens to us is what is important, is as important to them as it is to us. All things are connected. Only fools think otherwise.
Well, that's, you know, I guess the quantum entanglement theory, that at some point there is some connection. So, you know, and it's interesting too, when you had these channelings with these individuals that were able to bring in different entities from other areas of the cosmos, did they explain what it was like for them where they were at? Did they tell you about what a typical day was like?
They would tell us what happened to them, that they... The ones that we had contact with had told us that their lives were miserable. Their planets were barren. And they were struggling to exist. We had one species that had made the right choice. And the guide was, the channel was actually, she was there on their planet and had seen it and just said it was just amazing. It was miraculous. The way that they had designed their world, and the buildings that she saw, the things that she saw. That was the only one time that they had made it. But the rest of them that came through were the ones that had made the bad choice. But for the majority of it, though, it was incarnated and unincarnated spirits. And they were the ones that were, you know, talking to us about, you know, addressing and as best that they could, addressing issues of what would happen. You know, we were, many of them told us that, you know, it would be visible before 2012. And we had been thinking, well, you know, that didn't work out. Well, it was. We have images of Nibiru taken from the first camera installed at the Turrialba volcano in Costa Rica in 2010. We have images from the second camera, and we have images from the third camera, three different camera systems all imaging the same object. And the last one that was installed is very poor resolution, very bad camera, which was gifted by the United States government. So, you know, what the guides at the time, we thought the guides had, you know, had given us bogus information. They were right. It was visible. All right. Not from everywhere on the globe, but Costa Rica, this particular place was 10 degrees above the equator. with a pristine view out to the southwest over the eastern Pacific. And so it was, you know, from an elevation of 13,000 feet, it had the right angle on the curvature of the Earth. I mean, it was just a perfect spot to get that. And it was one of the things that fell through the cracks. And otherwise, they're very good at controlling it. In 2008, now in 2006, we reported on the South Pole Telescope. We broke the story on that. And the South Pole Telescope was used to observe the approach of Nibiru, and actually the Planet X system. It's got a sun at the center and with planets and moons around it. There were, in 2008, there were two disclosure videos from two whistleblowers from the same facility. And then after that, it was tightened down and with security, and that was the end of that. So, as I often say, the closer something gets to the truth in this genre, the faster it disappears. And that's what you have to deal with. You know, disinformation works because it, you don't have to give people the truth or a lie. You just have to give them a reason to ignore either. And that's what disinformation does. And so all they have to do is hit, you know, target something in a way that would create plausible deniability. And at which point their job is done, because everyone in the population will then immediately, they'll jump onto that like a hungry dog. And they'll use that plausible deniability to dismiss it, because in the final analysis, they just don't want to face it. And that is the truth of it. But there's the few that do. The ones that have the dreams, the visions, the premonitions, the good people, the ones who walk humbly with their God, the ones who usually get kicked out of more churches than I've ever been in. Okay? They're the ones that know what they know. They have eyes that see. They have ears that hear, and no one's going to tell them differently. You can torture them. You can do whatever you want. And like the Bible says, they just turn the other cheek and they stand fast. And well, these are the people who inspire me.
You know, and let me jump in here for a second too, Marshall, because you talk about prophecy and the Bible, and some Native American prophecies like the Hopi Indians. Revelations has a bunch of different prophecies there. And we obviously don't have time, I guess, to get into all of those. But what you're speaking of, do you get a lot of these references out of the Holy Bible, out of Revelations?
I treat the Bible as an allegorical source. I think that the Bible is actually, for the most part, the Bible is interpreted by people who don't understand it. I think if you sit down with the Bible and you read it literally, as very few do, there's a lot of information in there to prepare you for these times all throughout the Bible. Okay. I mean, for me, you know, it's interesting. I've spoken to many whistleblowers who finally, they gave up their cushy lives because they just couldn't look at themselves in the morning when they were shaving anymore. And they all said the same thing, to a man, now I know how Noah felt. Okay. And so, you look at, the Bible gives you powerful stories, inspiring stories. If you are going to walk humbly with your God, you're going to do it alone. You're going to find God on your own terms. You're not going to let anybody else tell you what to do. All right. And when you do that and you read your Bible literally, you see a whole new world and you see a document that prepares you. All right. The date fixations, and everybody's trying to, okay, if it says this, then this is going to happen, then that's going to happen, and this is going to have a date, and that to me is just mental masturbation. Okay? If you know it's coming, you prepare. And that's all. It's just that simple. But it's not the only wisdom text that is helping people to prepare. That's the reason why I published the Colburn Bible. All right. It has man on the street accounts, literally. I mean, there's accounts of the last flyby of Nibiru, which was what caused the 10 plagues of Exodus. All right. And if you take the 10 plagues of Exodus out of allegorical order as they are in the Bible, and you put them in science order, what you start with, okay, are the meteors. The meteors are coming down. It is a brown dwarf. It is surrounded by iron dust. And it's going to have one thing that comes from space, schreibersite. The schreibersite comes down, the iron in the schreibersite, and is what is going to cause the waters to turn red. There's phosphorus, which is what stimulates the growth of blue-green algae. The blue-green algae puts a microcystin. It's a very powerful toxin that can kill man and animal alike. It puts tons of that into the water. The frogs come out. The fish die. You have the flies. You have the pestilence. You have food sources that are diminishing. We know that locusts have a swarm spot on their legs. You have a grasshopper, it becomes a locust, morphs into a locust when enough grasshoppers or their food supply becomes so small that they pack in into density and they start striking each other and hit that G spot, if you will, on their legs. And then they triggers them to morph into, you know, locusts. I mean, as a species, you have to go. That's pretty admirable. You know, you pack us into that kind of density, we'll just start killing and eating each other. The locusts just simply, you know, the grasshoppers transform into locusts and then go out and swarm and devour everything in their way. All right. So you take the plagues of Exodus out of allegorical order and you put it in science order. It makes a lot of sense. Makes a hell of a lot of sense. And the descriptions in the Colburn Bible are very clear. And the prophecy in the Colburn Bible of these times has been fulfilled. This was a document that was first written around the time of the Torah, the five books, what people who have the Bible know as the first five books of the Old Testament. And the second part was written by the ancient Celts around the time of the crucifixion. So this parallels the Bible. And what the ancient Egyptians forecasted is a harbinger sign for the coming of the destroyer, as they called it. And it was also called the destroyer by the Hebrews. You'll find that depending on which translation of the Bible you use. But what the ancient Egyptians told us was that there would be clear signs. There were many of them, but the two that were most notable was that they predicted the rise of radical Islam and the fall of the Soviet Union. These two things have happened. We are in the end time as predicted by the ancient Egyptians 3,600 years ago. So, and what they tell us about this object when we see it in the sky is it will fill us with so much horror, so much terror, that men will become impotent, women will become infertile. And stop and think about it. What the hell could scare sex out of a horny teenager? What could be so bad? Well, what's coming is going to be so bad. That is, for the people who've been going, nothing's going to happen, or I'll wait, or whatever. Or the government wouldn't lie to me about something like this big. You know, all of the denial rhetoric. All of the denial rhetoric. They're the ones that are going to be standing out in the street, looking up at the sky, and pointing at it, and looking, oh my God, what the hell's that? Crap in their pants. And quick, let's listen to the radio, and the president's going to go, trust me, it's not going to be a problem. And everyone's going to believe it because they want to believe it, except the chosen. This is when they will either be gone already or on their way, and they will just quietly melt away to places of safety they have already arranged for themselves and for their loved ones. They will not see the devastation. The people,
do you think a place like Iceland will be more of a probable location to survive without worrying about cannibalism as much, or let's say Greenland, different areas that are just now being explored? Obviously, Iceland's been around forever and colonized, but Greenland that has been under
the
ice for so many years.
The ice sheets in Greenland and Iceland are melting. And you got, these are regions of high seismicity. They'll be isolated. Yeah, they may, you know, they may be able to survive and do well. There'll be areas where people will survive and do well. And those areas are going to vary depending on where you, which continent you are, where you're at. But in the final analysis, I'm not worried about the people who are the chosen. Because what I see is that they're quietly being moved to places of safety and brought together. And I didn't really understand this until I busted a move, until I left Santa Cruz and moved to Reno. And it was horrible for me because it was the end of a 19-year marriage. All right. My wife just simply wouldn't leave because, you know, her life was there and she wasn't going to leave her life. Her mother was there, wasn't going to leave her mother. All right. We're still very close friends. I love her. I care about her. We talk on the phone. We're the best of friends. I'm a man on a mission. She's not on the mission. All right. And, you know, the thing is, I am finding here, I came to Reno, and I found home. All right. Interesting thing is here, 60% of the people come from California. And what I find amazing is the people that came from California to Reno are the people that I was trying to find in California and could never find.
Huh.
And I get out and I look at the snow-peaked mountains. I feel on top of the world. It's just, I got here and it just felt like home. And so where you relocate to, that's wherever you get there, you'll know where you need to be, because inside you, that little voice is going to say, you're home. You're going to make it here. Okay? And, you know, there are no guarantees for anyone. But like I said, walk humbly with your God. All right? And if you're having the dreams and the visions and the premonition, you must take action. And you must move now. And if you move to an area and you rent, you do it because it is, I will say this is just one suggestion, is that you rent and you want, but you make sure you're into, you get a piece of dirt somewhere. By the end of 2015, you should have a piece of dirt somewhere. And if it's in an unincorporated area with a natural spring, or it's got a well on it that's down deep into artesian water, all right, and you have some soft soil so you can grow, but you don't want to be anywhere close enough to be on the grid, because if you're close enough to be on a grid, they'll slap a smart meter on you, and then you're going to be forced into an RFID tag, all right? And there will be laws that will be passed that if you don't put a smart meter on your house, even if you're completely off the grid with solar cells and whatnot, if you don't take the meter, they'll confiscate your property. This is the kind of Orwellian things we're seeing. So you want to find a piece of land, get a piece of dirt. And, you know, if it's off in an unincorporated area way back on, you know, dirt roads or whatever, the land will be relatively affordable right now. And just make sure you got a good four-wheel vehicle to get back in there. And, you know, go put a trailer, but you got to dig your bunker. Anything on the surface is a bone to be chewed. And, you know, you need to get down there. Radiation is going to be a real problem. My book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide, we actually have construction guidelines for how to build your own radiation shelter for yourself using inexpensive materials at hand. So things that you can do that. And, you know, what I can tell you is the people who have money are already doing these things, have been for some time. And when I talk to them on the phone, it's very short conversations. They'll come in. As customers, they're wonderful. They'll buy my best package. But when I do this survival relocation analysis, it literally only takes a few minutes because they'll say, tell me what you think of this particular location. And usually wherever they bought their bunker or silo is going to be within about 30 miles of that. And then I look at it and I go, all right, this, that, and the other thing. You know, funny thing, on a scale of 0 to 10, and for me, anything 7 or above is good. I've never seen those guys, and these are the perceptives, they're never below an 8. Never. So, you know, you do it. You walk humbly with your God. You trust that inner voice that's within you. And your chances of survival are significantly greater. I don't care what walk of life you come from, how much you have or how much you don't have. If you do that, your chances of surviving are a whole lot better. And also, the surviving is to what purpose, to what end? I mean, think about it. Do you want to go through a miserable decade of complete and total suffering for no other reason than you just want to cling desperately to life? Yeah. Now, I already saw in that vision I had 31 years ago, people didn't want to cling. They weren't interested in clinging to life. A lot of people went to that triage camp because they were tired of life and they just wanted somebody to help them end it. And you're going to see that. You're going to see a lot of people are just going to want to just say, you know, I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. But the ones that understand that this isn't about just surviving, that this is about the evolution of our species. And the ones that grasp that understand that that is the will of God. And if they will honor the will of God and walk the path, and everyone has to find their own path. Everyone has to find their own path. But if they walk that path with God, they'll get there. Or they'll see it. And if they don't make it, if they fall by the wayside, they will know when they stand before their God that they went the distance. All right? And so for me, you know, I look at this life. I'm not a perfect guy. Nobody is. But, you know, I always think about it. I always think about what am I going to be able to say for myself when I'm standing before my God? Thank you for giving me this knowledge of what's going to come, but I chose to sit on my ass. I'm not doing that. No, sir. No, sir.
You know, and you also talk, Marshall, about how a lot of people are just concerned about having a bunker and 2 years worth of supplies, and then they come out and they're going to get eaten by, you know, possibly, you know, some cannibals out there.
Yeah, they're
going to
be bunker bunnies. So, they're going to be sweet meat for the cannibals.
So let's
sweet meat.
Right, right. So let's talk about the spiritual evolution, the spiritual protection that you help guide people with. What, for our listeners out there that maybe don't have the chance right now to give you a call, maybe they will shortly, what can you give them to say, hey, yeah, this is what I can do to focus on making my spirit stronger, making myself stronger, as well as being in the right place at the right time?
I'm glad you asked that question. You go to my site, YOWUSA.com, I have an interview up, and it's the first of a series with a woman by the name of Susan Shumsky. And this is her topic. And the first one is called Spiritual Survival Skills. And she's going to explain to you about how to use auras, our ability to read auras, as a friend or foe system. After auras, we're going to talk about chakras. And after that, we are going to talk about how do you ask God for help. And these are the other two shows that are going to be following on in this series. And but if they listen to this, they listen to what Susan is saying now, she gives them exactly what to do. And there's actually on that radio page, all right? And excuse me for promoting a podcast on your podcast. I apologize as a guest. But I do these interviews because I know people are going to need this information. There's three affirmations in there for dealing with things you're going to have to deal with. All right. And because there are going to be entities that want to disrupt you. There, you know, like I said, this is a situation where we have friends and we have foes. And what you have to learn how to do is to walk the path intelligently so you can sidestep those forces which want us to suffer for whatever reason they have. And all of them feel that they have a good reason for whatever they want to do. The Nazis thought they were the good guys, for God's sakes. Look what they did. But then they're the friends. They're the ones that are going to help us. And I don't know. I mean, I went from a time in my life when I came to the realization of what was going to happen. And it was, I didn't want to survive it. I think that's the reason why I put on so much weight as I did back then. I've lost all that weight that I gained and then some. All right. Because I have hope for the future now. I'm walking humbly with my God. And I keep saying this again and again, but that is all you have to do. You just decide I'm going to walk humbly with my God. Me, myself, alone. You know, churches are beautiful. But God didn't make asphalt. God didn't make shingles. God didn't make gypsum drywall. He didn't make vinyl tile. All of this is dead stuff that was made by us. God made trees. You want to talk to God, go to God's house, sit under a tree, get quiet, open your soul, and ask a simple question. And that's how easy it is to start. And you, once you start doing that, once you start walking that path, you are going to begin evolving as a human. I look at myself. I think back to when I started this 12 years ago. 12 years ago, I was a Spock wannabe. Okay? Live long and prosper. Logic is tweeting bird. That was me. And I think about who I am. I'm so alien to the guy I knew 12 years ago that wrote his first article on Planet X in January 2012. You wouldn't believe it. I look back at myself and I go, who was that masked man? You know? But now, no matter how tough it gets, and coming here was hard. It was hard. But on the other end, it's been rewarding in ways I could have never imagined. Once I broke free, once I got out of that, I busted a move. And yes, I lost a marriage in the process, but I decided to walk humbly with my God and to pay the price. And once I paid that price, I found myself on a new destiny path. And amazing things are happening to me every day. I'm meeting amazing people every day. I wake up in the morning knowing this ugly freaking rock is going to come through and screw up our world so bad you don't want to think about it. I've accepted that. Now, there's another thing you can do. I have a YouTube on video called The Five Stages of Catastrophism. All right? For those of you that are at the precipice right now, the five stages of catastrophism that I describe in my video, and many tell me it's probably the best thing I ever did for them. The first stage is, I don't have time for this crap. The second stage is, oh crap. The third stage is, share the crap. The fourth stage is, crap happens. And the fifth stage is, the universe is unfolding as it should. Now, thanks to Serapis Bay, I made that fifth stage. And what I can tell you about the universe unfolding as it should is that the universe is not unfolding at the speed of human expectations. Stop asking about dates. Look, listen. God gave you eyes. God gave you ears. God gave you a mind, a magnificent mind. Don't squander it. Use it. And everybody, I see people float in. You know, my YouTube channel is approaching 18 million views. Now, out of that 18 million, one out of four will watch my videos from beginning to end. The rest will come in and they're like anything else. They'll hit it and bounce out, hit it and bounce out. A lot of them come back and then they watch the video full. But the reason why they hit it and bounce out is that it's that stage. I don't have time for this crap, because you see, people look at something and they understand instinctively that they need to ask a question, a turning point question, such as, what exactly am I looking at here? Or the biggie, what is the meaning of all of this? And they know the answer is something that will leave them tormented in bed, looking at the ceiling, and as scenarios of disaster float through their minds. They know that. They can smell it like rotting carrion. And so they say, I haven't got time for this crap. 1 in 100 will ask, what is the meaning of all this? And that is when they say, oh crap, the second stage. And they're laying in bed and it's driving them crazy. And then share the crap is when they do what we do when we love other people. We try to warn them about something that could hurt them. And what people don't understand when they get to the third stage, share the crap, is that they haven't mastered the topic. One, and two, they're talking to people that are still saying, I don't have time for this crap. And so what happens is they get their heads handed to them. Because this topic provokes ancient deep ingrams of fear within us. Ancient memories passed down from the generations to generations to generations of rocks falling from the sky and killing people. Nobody wants to think about that. And so you provoke that ingram. You bring it to the surface. And what happens is it immediately filters through social programming. Our society is rigidly programmed. And social programming is what controls us to make us good consumers. It's how we're supposed to be. Now, the social programming in North Korea comes from the great leader. Here it comes from the banking cartels, who tell the corporations what to say, who in turn tell the company, the governments what to say, who in turn tell everybody that we depend on, our doctors, our lawyers, our mothers, our dads, our ministers, what they're supposed to tell us. This is the chain of disinformation. And social programming is, if you're not in lockstep with the economic interests of the bankers, you are to be destroyed, mocked, ridiculed, outcast. All right? And so now you have it funneled through this social programming. And the social programming is so strong that people know it exists. They admit that it exists. But they're like alcoholics. They say, I can control it. And they, how do they control it? Finally, one night, after destroying their lives and countless other lives, they stand up in an AA meeting and they go, I'm so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. That's how powerful social programming is. And then what happens is, if you're having a spouse or a family member and they're having this reaction, they go into ego. It's my way or the highway. I'm going to torment you. I'm going to crucify you. I'm going to do whatever it is I have to do to hurt you, to make you stop thinking about it, researching it, or doing whatever you're doing. And what I find with those who are in awareness and on the spiritual path, they take the abuse. They turn the other cheek. And they just go elsewhere. The fourth stage is the lonely stage. That's where you come to resignation that crap happens. And it's a bleak place to be. But then you finally chew through that and you do it. See, what happens is that is what triggers. It's that fourth stage, that resignation that crap happens. You accept it. And that is what triggers your Kundalini ascension. And then you begin a spiritual evolution of your own. And you become more. And you see the greater purpose in everything. And that you have a purpose. And that you have a mission. You may not know it now, but you will know, you'll find it when you need to know the mission. But what you'll always know is what the next step is. That is the magnificence of being in the fifth stage. The universe is unfolding as it should. And so, do your beans, bullets, and bunkers. That's important. It gives you a sense of control in the immediate sense. But think of it as your short game. And once you're working your short game, you need to work your long game. All right? That's where you really focus on the spiritual development and walking humbly with your God, because this is when you're going to know. This is when God is going to be able to help you find those places of safety, to find fresh water, to find food. You're going to find it, and it's going to be a mystical and a magical experience, and it's going to work infinitely better than Geiger counters and binoculars and AR-15s. Yeah, that's important to have. And you'll need those things. And it's just as important to know how to handle a weapon as it is to walk humbly with your God, because you're going to have to do both. And that's what it takes to do the preparation and to really prepare. But once you do that, you go down that path, magnificent things begin to happen. You encounter people you would have not in no other way. Synchronicity comes into play in an amazing way. Synchronicity is that magic thing. You think about an old friend you haven't talked to in years, the phone rings. It's him. It's her. It's that human connection. We're all connected. We're all broadcasting. Once you're on the frequency, you know, it's a whole different world. And you're going to see it differently. And then you're going to know your purpose. And in the meantime, you know, what I say to those of you who are in the ages of 45 to 65, you need to do two things. You first off, you need to get pharma free. Because once the guacamole hits the fan, modern medicine as we know it, and that's going to be a heavy loss because, hey, pain management, emergency medicine, there's some amazing things. But modern medicine as we know is a three-day lifespan because that's when the diesel fuel runs out in the hospital generators. And after that, it's catch as catch can. All right? And so you need to find natural alternatives. That's why I've begun exploring. I have discovered, you know, using all different kinds of things I wouldn't have thought of before. And you want to be self-reliant, you want things you can have for yourself, and there's simple things you can get in stockpile. Yeah. You know, colloidal silver, you betcha. It's a good thing to do, especially if you know how to make it yourself. But, you know, baking soda is going to help you survive the superbugs that are going to come. Essential oils. All right, that's going to be important. And pharmaceutical-grade essential oils are going to last. They can last 1,000 years. You know, a lot of the things that we get have a 9-year, you know, have a 2-year shelf life. And that's only that, you know, they don't turn rancid. Their potency begins diminishing months after the product's been manufactured because most of the stuff that you would see on Amazon is using industrial processes which corrupt the inherent molecular integrity of the original produce that's used. But these are things you learn on the way. Once you're walking humbly with your God, profoundly. And you're not going to find that in a church or a synagogue or a mosque. You're going to find it sitting under a tree because God made trees. God didn't make asphalt shingles. And opening your mind and opening your soul and starting with a simple question. Keep it simple, you know. Don't ask God, hey, bring me up to speed since the dinosaurs disappeared, all right? That doesn't work. And, you know, if you go listen to my podcast, you know, I've got 140 shows. All of them are on survival topics. I've done topics on creating communities, dry water harvesting, all kinds of things. These are authors that have done wonderful, wonderful works, okay? And there's a huge library of these shows that can be downloaded, and they can really help you. But the first thing you really want to start with is this one with Susan Shubinsky. And her stuff is just absolutely, her books are brilliant. She's a flower child who went to India, studied under the gurus, same ones that Deepak Chopra and the Beatles studied under. And she is a survivalist, and she is teaching spirituality for survival. And, you know, the interviews that I did with her, the chemistry between us was just absolutely magical. In this first video, I do talk about, or the first audio that's up, I talk about dealing with spoiler spouses, and I'll explain to those of you who are going through that because, you know, for the ones who aren't aware, the chosen, as I love to call them, The ones that are agonizing, the ones that are the 4 out of 5 that are in a marriage with a spoiler spouse who is, you know, doing the social programming number on their heads. And it gets brutal. And it's really intimidating on top of all the other issues they have to deal with. It's not like they're rich. You know, the rich, no problem. Hey, you know, they do what they're going to do. The family, it's, you know, as they say, it's the golden rule. You as the gold makes the rules. And for the family, it's the kids are going, hey, dad wants a bunker. Cool. Well, I still get the Porsche and I get to go to Stanford. So what the hell? Let dad do it. Okay. But for those of us out there struggling in the middle class, in this new oligarchy economy of ours, where a handful of elites have everything and we're fighting over crumbs that fall off the table, it's a whole different ball of wax. And it's really hard. It's hard to bust a move. You got all, what do I do about my job? What do I do about my house? And then on top of that, you got a spouse that is going, you do this, I'm going to divorce your ass so fast it'll make your head spin. And so turns out that is the number one impediment. But the problem, you know, I mean, it really gets down to, for me, I had, you know, I had that as a problem. And as T.S. Eliot said, you know, it ends with a whimper, not with a bang. I woke up one morning and I realized that my marital vows were not till death wish do we part. And to live along a coastline in an area that is, I had already been shown in visions, would be devastated. Santa Cruz, the whole Bay Area, Monterey, and it's a beautiful area. It's all going to be absolutely devastated by a tsunami. Anyone there is just going to get ripped apart by hydraulic sandpaper, if you will. This I have seen. And I, that was a vision so clear in my mind, I couldn't escape it. And day after day, laying there in bed and just miserable. As on one hand, I got a wife that's saying, I'm going to divorce you. On the other hand, I've seen what I've seen and I know what I know. And it finally came down to, no, I'm not going to live here for a death wish. Not for her, not for anybody. She's beginning to understand it, and we're still the best of friends. But this is what it means to be in awareness. And yet, here I am with new friends in a new place. It's home. It feels good. And I love every day. I get up at 5:30 every morning now. Man, that wasn't me. For all my life, I didn't get up earlier than 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. At 5:30, I didn't have a pulse. And now I get up at daybreak because it's another day to make a difference. It's another day to be in it for the species. It's another day that something magical is going to happen. And all because I busted a move and I paid the price, and the dividends are beyond calculation. You know, and for those of you who are in the same situation, and you know the pain, you know the pain, okay? And you just got to soldier through. You know, you were chosen. That doesn't mean you accept the burden of your responsibility. That doesn't mean you accept the burden of your awareness. You know, you can try and drink it away, smoke it away, sex it away, do whatever you want to do. It'll always be there in the background. It's inescapable because you've been chosen and it's a matter of attrition. You're either going to stand up and take on to it or it's just going to grind you down. And it took a long time for me to stand up and take responsibility. And I do this topic. And so I understand the pain people go through. I understand it all too well. You know, but interestingly enough, when I do these survival relocation analysis with folks, they help me in ways I couldn't have imagined. They inspire me in ways. It's a sharing. It's a very loving thing. It's a very beautiful thing. So, you know, there you go. You got some questions from your chat room there?
You know, I think our chat room is absolutely enthralled. We had several questions here. I know one of them that just came up is there's a YouTube channel, I think by the name of Planet X, and with their research, they're saying that there's a high probability that in the year 2016, there is going to be a Passover of Nibiru. Is that any research you found to be correlating with that?
What we're seeing in our research is that it will be in 2016 when we believe the objects will be naked eye visible to everyone on the planet, sometime in 2016. After that, that's when things are going to start getting panicky. And to give you an idea, those that are procrastinating, and I think is the site you're talking about is 7 Planet X, or they call it something like that. It's the guy who's using his research to validate the Bible, kind of reverse engineering science into Planet X. And I've seen his work. I think there are some things he does that are really stellar, but he's agenda driven. For us, I'm not agenda driven. We're a science group. We look at prophecy. We look at the Bible as this is folklore. It's human corollary, if you will. But in the final analysis, what we look at is the science. That is our final determinant. And you know, what we're seeing is that how it plays out and how long it takes to play out is anyone's guess, but we believe it's safe to say that in 2016, it will be naked eye visible. Then will come a tremendous amount of denial. After that, a good way to look at how things will unfold is there was a book written many years ago in Silicon Valley, and it was popular when I was before I became a publisher. I was working in Silicon Valley. I was a systems analyst and a senior technical writer. I also did Marcom writing, and my clients included AT&T, Sun, Oracle, Lockheed Martin, Hewlett-Packard, and so forth. I was the guy that wrote the books that helped them sell their products to decision makers. And there was a book at the time that was very popular called Crossing the Chasm. And what it really did is it broke down the market penetration into early adopters, mainstream adopters, and late adopters. And there was the chasm was between the early adopters, which is about 10% of your market. And then in that chasm, it kind of falls off. And this is where a lot of startup companies die. Because they go out and they start making some money initially, and then the sales dry up and they've gone out and rented all these big offices and hired all these people, and that's it. You know, their venture capital groups are pulling the plug on them because they don't have the assets. They don't have the wherewithal to get into the mainstream, which is really 80% of the bulk. And then after that, you have the late term adopters, the last 10%, the diehards. They just simply buy it because they got to do it. That's, you know, no other choice. So let's talk about what happens when Nibiru happens. You're going to have the early adopters. Now, these are the people who are going to go get to places of safety, and they're going to spend whatever they're going to spend to do it. Now, for those that have already moved from a place of harm's way to a place of safety, and you happen to be renting a house or an apartment, you're screwed. Because this is when we're going to start seeing road signs with shyster lawyers advertising to landlords, I'll get them out. I'll get them out. I'll get them out. And they'll file evictions on the flimsiest of pretexts. and there will be so much money in the marketplace, there'll be more than enough to corrupt the judges. And if you're renting, you're on the curb. That's it. And then you wind up in a FEMA camp, or you're out there, you know, you're running from the law. So you don't want to do that, because these folks are going to be the ones that'll move into an area that you may find you're renting a small house for $500 a month because it's a hard-pressed area, but it's a good place for survival. And somebody walks in from New York and they say, I'll give you four times that a month and I'll pay the year in advance. Plus, I'll do all the maintenance. What's the landlord going to do? They're going to drive down the street and they're going to see the shyster lawyer billboards. I'll get them out. I'll get them out. I'll get them out. And there you go. You're screwed. That's the reason why wherever you go to, you need to do it now before those early adopters, the ones that really get the message once this thing shows up, and they're out there with the money and they'll pay any price, any price. And they'll be the ones putting you on the street, along with the greedy landlords. So find a place where you can get a cheap piece of dirt. You know, you can go to a sheriff's auction and buy an old mobile home or an old motor home. Put it there. There you got a place to be. And ideally, you have a piece of dirt that's far enough out of the way that a public utility doesn't service it. Because once they service it, you have a smart meter. Once you have a smart meter, they're going to know when to come and grab you and stick an RFID chip in you. If you're completely off the grid and they can't smart meter your house, it's much better. I'd rather not have a chip in me that's going to block my connection to God and read by the light of a hurricane lantern than to have a smart meter on the house and an RFID chip into me so that I could be programmed into some sort of elitist Roman human robot. I ain't going to go there.
Right. Well, I got to tell you, Marshall, I really appreciate you coming out here tonight and spending your time with us. I know that we had a delay at the beginning, so you've been almost 3 hours with us, and thank you. Our listeners have been enthralled. Hopefully you'll come back on again with us sometime.
Be happy to.
Fantastic.
A very special thank you to our guest tonight. For all of you that had the opportunity to be here with us, if you enjoyed the show, follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/clandestinetimelord, for the most recent interviews, videos, and podcasts. Or you can check us out on the World Wide Web, www.theproject.com. Would you like to be a guest on our show? If you have information that the world needs to see and hear, send us an email, guestbookings@leakproject.com. Thank you, everybody. This is Rex Bear with Leak Project. Stay safe and be the change you want to see. Good night.